Joseph Papp is arguably American theater's most influential producer. He's famous for creating innovative productions like For Colored Girls and A Chorus Line, and for launching the careers of now illustrious performers such as George C. Scott, James Earl Jones, and Meryl Streep. But throughout his career, in between taking risks on contemporary plays, he always returned to the works of Shakespeare. Last month, Papp began a 6-year series that will present all 36 of Shakespeare's plays. Papp also co-authored a new book called Shakespeare Alive, which is a companion to Bantam's new paperback series of the complete works of Shakespeare. Papp grew up speaking Yiddish as his first language. I asked him how he got interested in Shakespeare.
You know how melodic Yiddish is, really,
yes,
as
I
a language?
Yes, I do, yeah.
And the key to Shakespeare is the melody. The ear is the key to it. But I didn't immediately go from Yiddish to Shakespeare. It's just that I had a teacher, naturally. You get the right teacher who is committed to Shakespeare and loves Shakespeare. And it was just in the junior high school. I sort of stumbled on Julius Caesar. And the word sounded so wonderful, particularly Mark Antony. And I began to memorize just the speeches.
Did you get to the theater much?
No, I didn't know the theater existed.
How'd you find out about it?
Well, later on, they took a bunch of us to, when I was in high school, to see John Gielgud at Hamlet, John Gielgud's Hamlet. And that was the first time I went to the theater.
And you loved it?
No, I didn't. I thought he spoke in a phony fashion. I said, why couldn't he speak more naturally? You know, he had a tremolo in his voice. He's become a gorgeous actor now. But when he was young, when I was first exposed to it, the speech sounded very strange. It was British, you know. But it was very, you know, it was, oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. Now, you know, to a kid from Brooklyn and coming from where people spoke in ordinary ways, it was too high class. But I did kind of enjoy the show. But the speech to me, I felt was too artificial. And so, I mean, later on I became involved with that whole concept of not having artificial British speech, but having good American speech.
In the late 50s, you really made headlines in New York for bringing the free Shakespeare plays to Central Park. And the Parks didn't want you to do it for free.
Not the Parks. It was the Commissioner Parks, Robert Moses. The Parks didn't mind me at all. The trees were welcoming me. And the grass was very responsive. But it was the Commissioner Parks, and it was also the Commissioner of many other things, who objected to the people trampling the grass. And a lot of people sent him bags of bird seed and grass seed and all sorts of things. But there was a great crisis there because we were about to be thrown out. And it made the headlines, you know, day after day. And we finally got to the appellate court. And the appellate court ruled that this imperious man was arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. And suggested, they couldn't insist, that we be permitted to play there. And as a result of that, we stayed there.
You were doing Shakespeare, and you were doing it for free outside.
Well, the whole concept of starting...
Why did it have to be Shakespeare, and why for free? Yeah.
We started with Shakespeare. I started with this notion of wanting to bring Shakespeare to the people without charge and play in the city's parks, playgrounds, deal with the Board of Education. It was to bring with the things that I loved to other people. And I felt Shakespeare was understandable. I felt... He'd been taken over too much by the academics, and they were controlling him, and he was being presented in a way that would turn a lot of people off. And so I made it sort of my commitment, and I've been with this for 34 years now, to bring the Shakespeare and to develop American actors to act the works of Shakespeare, and not in a nationalistic way, but just clear, good American speech. The way I'm speaking to you now, I consider that fair American speech. There are people that speak it much better. But without any localisms in the speech, but without removing certain accents. I mean, I've had Raul Julia play all major parts. He's a Hispanic actor, and I don't want to ruin his marvelous accent. But he's clear in his speech. You understand every word. He has a marvelous ear.
One of the things you've really done is find Black, Hispanic, and women playwrights whose work wasn't getting performed to a large public. It seems to me you've probably had to travel to really small theaters and performance spaces and out-of-the-way places to discover people. How do you do it? Do you have a routine for doing that?
No, it's not a routine exactly. Once you begin to operate in the proper way, you begin to generate a particular kind of work. You begin to attract people. I mean, Black writers who thought they would never could be produced would come to me because they know that they have a chance. Black actors, Hispanic actors, they know We're not going to, you know, twit them around and pretend and cast in any kind of, you know, symbolic manner, that we give parts to good actors. I do it because I think it's the right thing and get the best actors. And I think New York is a multiracial community and should be represented on the stage that way.
You've had shows that you nurtured in a nonprofit setting and then they moved on to Broadway. But I don't think you've ever really tried to just move your operation altogether to Broadway.
There's no way to do that, because there's no way to know what play is going to succeed and what is not going to succeed. Broadway is a freelance operation. It's a commercial operation. If I have something that seems to attract a lot of attention, gets good notices, and people want to see it, I have to be very careful, because some of the best plays I do never go to Broadway, because they're too good.
Well, you know, some people have, like, Broadway in their blood, and no matter what they think of Broadway, they have to be on Broadway.
No.
There's a whole mythology. Was that mythology ever in your system about Broadway?
Never, and still not. In fact, I really don't like Broadway that much, because most of it is vulgar. I mean, most of the things that are put on stage. I mean, I produce plays, and you'll find I always have one standard of work. I would do the same thing downtown at my small theaters. I have five small theaters in one building in Greenwich Village, as I would do on Broadway or in the park. There's not a double standard. I say, well, I'm going to do this in a commercial way. I don't know what that means. I mean, we either do it well or we don't do it well. It has certain advantages. I like the popularity of Broadway. And the reason I go to Broadway is two reasons. One is that it's important for us. We have to make money, because we give a lot of things away for nothing. We play free in the park, and that's $2.5 million. And we need to have successes from time to time. That's one reason. The other reason, and it's closely allied, is you do reach a large popular audience on Broadway. In small theaters, you reach 200, 300 people a night.
On Broadway, a critic can really kill a play overnight.
Not a critic. One critic can kill a play.
Critic for the New York Times, you mean?
That's correct. The New York Times has the greatest readership for people who go to the theater. And actually, they're influenced by the first string critic, which would be Frank Rich in this particular case, who has a tremendous power, not personally, but the fact that he's backed by this paper that has this kind of readership.
You have a reputation for actually picking up the phone, calling a critic, and bawling him or her out for a bad review that you thought was unjustified. Is that just reputation, or is that really true?
No, I've done that, and we'll continue to do that from time to time. I feel they're stupid, and sometimes they are utterly dumb.
Isn't it impolitic to bawl out a theater critic?
Yes, it is impolitic. I've thrown theater critics out of the theater. That's more impolitic. I threw Walter Kerr out of my theater.
What'd you tell him?
Told him to get the hell out. I used a fancier word than that. And because he had no right to be there. It was a preview, and he had no right. We weren't ready to invite critics. And the same thing with John Simon. I just got him by the tie one night and just sort of pushed him around a little bit, because I felt the way he mistreated people was terrible. I mean, the way he said about actors, that's cruel, that kind of stuff. I mean, critics have the right to criticize. They can say anything they like. But when they start to become personal about actors' appearances, or they become snide and all that stuff, well, then I don't need them.
Do you have theater nightmares?
And what sort, you mean?
Dreams, literally dreams.
I dream about the theater?
Yeah.
Well, all dreams are theater. Because in a dream, you're both the actor, the director, and you're also the scenery.
But you don't roll the credits at the end.
Sometimes you do, or the discredits at the end.
But do you have the equivalent of dreams where you walk out of stage and I'm working on a play,
oh, wow. Well, you know, the worst dream you have, whether you're an actor or a director or anything, is that you come on and you don't know the lines. In fact, you don't know what play you're on. And you're on the stage, and there are thousands of people out there, and you say, well, what is the first line?
You direct and you produce. Did you ever really want to act?
I've acted. I was in Death of a Salesman on the Road Company.
But you didn't stay with it.
No, it's too hard to act. It's the most difficult of all the professions, because you have to be extremely vulnerable. You have to give yourself to the thing completely. I like to perform occasionally, and I do. I've been offered a lot of films, and I just don't do them because they're boring kind of things. But I enjoy performing. But to make a career of it, which means suddenly you're in a... Well, the worst thing is to be in a hit show where you have to do 8 performances a week. That's very tiresome. I don't know how some actors do it.
Well, you direct them.
I know. But I go through the process and help me create the role. And then I don't have to be there every night as they do. It's a whole different thing. We say goodbye to each other for a little while, and they're sort of on their own then, you see.
Joseph Papp is currently presenting Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Public Theater in New York. Julius Caesar is next in the cycle. This is Fresh Air.